Welcome to Alaska Outdoors Magazine with host Evan Swenson. You're invited to come along with us as we bring you accurate and authentic answers for Alaskans by Alaskans. If it's in the outdoors and in Alaska, it's right here on Alaska Outdoor Magazine. Now here's Evan Swenson, your host for Alaska Outdoor Magazine.
Good afternoon. I'm Evan Swenson, and today we'll be talking with Alaska author Steve Levi. I suspect that Steve is Alaska's most prolific writer. Steve, you've authored how many books, 20-some-odd books that have actually been published?
Well, this is my 22nd book, and you can find most of them at the Lusac Library, but I prefer you go look for them at Barnes & Noble.
they pay a royalty on the ones at Barnes & Noble, but not at the Lusac Library.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you get the glory, though.
Well, I'd like people to read my work. You know, I'd like them to buy it, of course, but if you're not going to buy it, please read it. And it is available at the Lusac.
Steve, most of your books, at least the ones that I have read, with the exception of one that you had on aviation, have been historical novels. You seem to be kind of a guy that's living in the past. Now, this book now is a guidebook. This is your first experience in a guidebook?
No, actually, it's my second. The most important thing about understanding Alaska is that we do have a very short history. So if you flew to New York and went to New York, you could see places that have been up there since the Revolutionary War. But when you start talking about Alaska, all of the cities are fairly new. Even Nome is only 100 years old this year. So what I tried to do is I tried to develop a travel book that showed Alaska as part of its history.
Now what does that mean? This travel guide then is kind of goes along with your research on your novels. And
well, this is the centennial of the Alaska Gold Rush, and the people who are going to be buying it this year and for the next couple of years are going to be coming up here and interested in the Alaska Gold Rush. So if you go to Nome, you want to know what Nome was, when it was founded, what it has to do with the Alaska Gold Rush, and Juneau, Fairbanks, so on and so forth. And the key here is to show people that Alaska, not only are we a beautiful state to come see, catch those kings, but we've also got some rather staggering history.
Steve, the name of the book
is Travel Smart Alaska.
Travel Smart Alaska by Stephen Levi. Now, you don't go by Stephen, though. You're Steve Levi, aren't you?
Yeah, just don't call me anything but late for dinner, right?
And it doesn't matter what's on the check as long as it'll cash.
You got
yeah.
it.
But you are not officially, you are not Stephen, you are Steve Levi.
That's fine.
Is that correct?
That either one is fine.
Now, on your gold rush things, you had been researching for other things, pilots and old time pilots, bush pilots, those kind of things, and you had to run across gold rush paraphernalia, history, those kind of things. Now, is that what you've included in this Travel Smart guidebook for Alaska?
Well, each one of the communities that I cover, there's something unusual about them. Alaska is a city of communities. Each one is very, very different. Nome is different than Kotzebue, is different from Bethel, is different from Juneau. And what I was trying to do was trying to show Alaska as a collection of different communities, and if you did step off the cruise ship at Wrangell, there was something for you to do. It wasn't just like there was a grocery store and a gas station and that was it. But each Alaskan community has unique offerings, and that's what the book is designed to do. When you go to Juneau, here's some unique things to do. When you go to Fairbanks, here are some unique things to do, and they're all different.
Steve, from at least as long as I've lived here, for four decades, Alaska Milepost has been kind of the guidebook of the highway and the things around. How does your book compare, or how is it different to the Milepost, other than in size and in price?
Well, they make more money than I do, but actually, the Milepost, if you're driving up the highway, the Milepost is probably the best book to get. But it's not going to talk to you about Nome and Kotzebue and Cordova, Wrangell. It's not going to talk about the Inside Passage or why you should visit the Arctic. My book is for someone who is called the soft adventure traveler. It's for somebody that wants to fly to Anchorage, spend a night in a hotel, then they want to go whitewater rafting the next day and maybe fishing for king salmon, then they want to spend a night on a sandbar. But they still want to do a whole bunch of different things, but they don't want to get stuck on a tour where they have to get out of a hotel onto a bus, and they drive on the bus all day and then get into another hotel.
So your book is more for the independent traveler as opposed to the one on tour?
Right. And it's specifically designed for somebody who was coming up here and they know exactly what they want to do. What they would like to do is they would like to catch a fish as opposed to go to a salmon bake.
Oh, okay. Now, what about, obviously, this program is not going to be heard by those that are going to read your book.
That's a shame.
Yeah, it just does not go that far. I'm sorry, Steve. How about, we're talking to residents of Alaska. Why would someone that lives here, listening to this program today, are we talking to just people that would, this just information about Steve Levine's book, or is there a purpose of your book for those that may be listening?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because you talk to most Alaskans, and they've been to Anchorage, and they've been to Fairbanks, and they might have been to Juneau, but when you talk to them about Wrangell, they say, well, why should I go to Wrangell? And that's a good question. You know, Wrangell is a city, a very unique city, because it has petroglyphs. It's the only city in Alaska that has petroglyphs. Okay, why go to Bethel? Why go to Nome? Why go to Kotzebue? Each one of these communities has something unique. And most Alaskans don't think about Nome. They say, oh, yeah, it's that city that's up there on the Bering Sea somewhere.
At the end of the
Iditarod. Yeah. But what happens is, for a lot of times, relatives will come up and they'll say, well, gee, I've spent 3 days in Anchorage and I've taken the train to Fairbanks and I like it. Now, what else can I do? And most people in Anchorage say things like, well, we can go drive down to Homer and catch fish. Well, that may be a lot of fun for the Alaskans, but the relatives would like to see something that's different. And if you're going down toward Homer, the best thing to do is maybe stop in and see the Old Believers. You know, that's something that a lot of Alaskans don't even know is there. However, after you buy my book, you will be able to, you know, geographically dissect the state so that wherever you live in Alaska, you'll be able to find something unique in your area.
Steve, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to ask you about the believers down in Homer. We'll continue that conversation. We'll be right back, and when we come back, we'll continue our talk with Alaska author Steve Levi. Stay tuned to Alaska Outdoor Magazine, your window to Alaska outdoors.
How can you make a Greyhound bus followed by the police vanish off the Golden Gate Bridge? How is it possible for an armored car with a motorcycle escort to vaporize in a tunnel? And how can a loaded plane leave Seattle on a direct flight to Anchorage, Alaska, and arrive empty? These are the kinds of cases Heinz Noonan, the bearded Holmes of the Sandersonville Police Department, must solve. But he cannot start to solve any one of these cases until he can figure out how the crime was committed in the first place. You can follow him as he solves the oddest cases in America. Some examples? Okay. How can air cargo increase in weight as it flies? Why would anyone steal 8,000 gallons of water? Why is a housewife with no criminal record digging in a landfill? And why would anyone steal 200 garden gnomes and then place them in a pattern across the city? Can Heinz Noonan solve these crimes and other mysteries of the universe? Be an armchair detective and see if you can solve these impossible crimes as fast as Captain Heinz Noonan, the bearded Holmes, as he struggles to discover how these crimes were committed before he can capture the perps. Steve Levi's Impossible Crime books, printed, ebooks, and audiobooks, are available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and everywhere good books are sold.
Welcome back to your window to Alaska Outdoors, Alaska Outdoor Magazine. We're glad you decided to come along with us. Steve, the old believers down at Homer, who are they, other than those that go out on the boats and know that they're going to catch a king?
The old believers are a group of Russian Orthodox residents that believe that the old ways are the best ways. And so when you go down there, they don't have a lot of modern conveniences like cable television, ATM machines, Visa card, stuff like that. And, you know, basically they are, their view is that the world was great, in the Russian Orthodox world was great before we started having all these modern conveniences. And it's just kind of like seeing like the Amish are in Pennsylvania. It's the old believers are here in Alaska.
So it's Alaska's Amish. But not really.
But not really.
But not really, yeah. How about this, Steve? How about Nome? You know, people, like you say, have been in Alaska maybe for a good number of years, and when it becomes vacation time, of course, they head south and they pass those that where they're going. They're coming back up here to go to the places that perhaps we here have not seen or not been to. If you was going to pick a city like Nome and tell people, hey, this is why you want to go to Nome, why would anyone want to go to Nome other than be a part of the Iditarod?
Well, actually, Nome is a fairly fascinating city, and actually that there's a Nome-Kotzebue triangle, which is well worth taking. And that's because when you go, Kotzebue is almost like a native village where whites just happen to live there, while Nome is actually a white community that does have natives there. So you get kind of a taste of the frontier of Alaska. Nome was a critical stop for the centennial because that was one of the largest strikes in Alaska. There were three large strikes in Alaska, Fairbanks, Juneau, and Nome. And in Nome was probably the most turbulent is because people could step right off a steamship onto the beach and start panning for gold. I mean, they didn't have to put on packs and walk all the way to Dawson. But I like Nome is because it's a quaint little community, and if you want to go do some gold panning, you can actually go right down to the beach, and your chances of finding $1 million are just as good as any of the Argonauts of 1899.
Just as bad as them.
And just as bad as them, too.
When first year that we was up here, I think it was about the first year, there was a big 33 third speed record of had a bunch of these tall tales of the Arctic. One of them was that they told about a guy that stepped off the boat at Nome, had high hopes, stepped off, dipped one pan in, didn't have big nuggets in it, pulled out his pistol and killed himself. Was that just fiction for this? Are there those things that really happen, Steve?
I've never heard of anything like that. Most of the people who went to Nome figured that they were going to be making lots of money, and they got up there and then quite literally ran out of money. The biggest problem with a lot of people in Nome is that when they got there, they really didn't understand that we had winters, and when winter comes in Nome, it freezes the Bering Sea. So these people would go up to Nome, and they'd have just enough money for a month's worth of food, and they'd get in there on the last steamer, and the ocean would freeze, and here they're stuck, you know, trying to make out... Here they are trying to buy 6 months' worth of food with 1 month' worth of dollars. And a lot of these guys ended up living on the beach in tents in the middle of the winter, which has got to be rough.
Steve, that would have been before Social Security and unemployment and those kind of things. What did people do?
They died.
Really? They just starved to death? There was no church down the street or no food bank or...
Nome was a city that was about 12 blocks deep and about 20 miles long and had 20,000 people in it, and it was just turbulent all the time. It's just, it's hard to imagine today. When you fly to Nome, you look at it and say, wow, this is a neat little city, you know, of what, 3,000 people? But at one time, it extended 20 miles up the coast. And, you know, when bad times came, like they had huge storms in there that wiped out half the city, and some people just got pulled out to sea. They even had some of the graves. You know, the water was high enough that it hit the graveyard and pulled a lot of the coffins out to sea, too.
Well, you don't think about those kind of things in our comfortable society where if you really are down on your luck, there are some places where you can go and you don't have a problem. What about other communities that you might find interesting along the Alaska tour that you might recommend for people that live here?
Mm-hmm. Certainly Valdez, because it's so easy to get to. And also, Valdez was the site of one of the largest stampedes in the Alaska Gold Rush, and it was a stampede across the glacier. And the stampeders moved across the glacier, 3,000 of them, and when they got to the other side, there was no gold. So basically what happened is a lot of people ended up starving to death right there on the glacier. They figured that 3,000 people went over the glacier, but only 2,000 came back.
So you've got people that headed from Valdez. So it is part of the Gold Rush history.
Certainly, the 3,000 people is a fairly large stampede.
Let's go to the phone, Steve. We've got Beatrice on the line. We're talking with author Steve Levi. This is Alaska Outdoor Magazine. Beatrice, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hello there.
I'm just on my way to pick up my daughter for a hair appointment, and I listen to your guys' radio station when I'm not working. It's awesome. I was raised in Kotzebue and Nome, and I've been in the tourist industry. I used to be a little market for Neil Burke there. and used to fly Kotzebue Nome, and Nome is such an awesome place. I mean, Kotzebue is great, too. I was raised in both places, but you get a car, you don't necessarily have to take a tour, and you can drive out to Pilgrim's Hot Springs. You know, you drive out towards Council, and you see the old lines where the miners, the water lines, and it has, you know, the old train. It's just such an awesome place. People are nice there. It's just, I think everybody in Alaska should go to Nome.
You mean you agree with that, the thing that the propaganda that Nome puts out that says there's no place like Nome?
Exactly. There is no place like Nome. The people there are so friendly. And Kotzebue is the same way. I mean, I'm from, my family's from Noatak. And I have family that live in Kotzebue, old aviation, you know, bus. And Kotzebue is a great place. I mean, NANA, the Native Corporation up there, for tourism, we don't, you know, they don't have the money that the North Slope Borough has, and I mean, they're ready for tourists. They have great buses. I used to work for the tour company up there, and just an awesome museum. I mean, it's just culture is just incredible. I'm an Eskimo, so it's pretty incredible to get up there and see how the Native people live and their traditions, and yes.
May I ask you a question? Maybe Steve knows the answer to this, but while we have you here, let's ask it. What about residents of Alaska really being tourists? Are they treated any different or special? I mean, if you was to mention the fact that, hey, I live in Anchorage and I'm just a tourist up here, what would be the response of the
folks there? They would welcome you just as much as the tourists. I send people up towards Kayana. I have some friends that own an air taxi service up there. And, you know, I'm telling you, if you're in Kotzebue, you got to go to Kayana. It's beautiful.
You know, Larry Shirk at
Kayana. Oh, yeah. He used to be down on the beach and getting ready to take a bunch of people out to she fish. And I would just fly in on my days off from Mark Year, and he'd ask his people, and lots of them were from Anchorage.
Oh, really?
People, yeah, the guy that used to own the Cub Embroidery place, he passed away not too long ago. He was up there with his grandson. His grandson caught every fish that he could catch in Alaska, and he had to catch a she-fish. A little six-year-old boy outfished us all. And Lori Shirk asked this old guy, he said, you know, can I bring my stew? Because I was a flight attendant. And I've done a lot of fishing with Lori Shirk. Great guy.
Beatrice, have you seen Steve Levi's book? Now, what's the name of that?
Cowboys of the Sky?
No, the guidebook. The one we're talking about today, Travel Smart Alaska.
You know what? I haven't, but I mean, I'm heading back into town. I'm out in Chugiak right now, heading back into town, and I'm going to go pick it up because I'm really interested to see, like, you know, what he has in there about Kotzebue and Nome. Yeah, you know, I got to throw something in for Rest Flying Service because that's where I'm at this summer. Great people.
Oh, well, okay, you got that in. We're going to send Todd a bill for that. Okay, Beatrice, thanks for calling. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for talking about Kotzebue and Nome. Hopefully we'll be able to get more people up there.
Okay.
Right.
All right, well, that was a nice call, Steve. Sound like someone's going to run right out and buy your book.
Of an audience.
Yeah, you made 80 cents today. All right, we're going to take a break. But when we come back, we will continue our talk with Steve Levi. Stay tuned to Alaska Outdoor Magazine, your window to Alaska Outdoors.
John Pontius, Patty Kilson, Carl Douglas, Lily Goodman, Joe Kurtak, Len Guy, Mark Otte, Doug DeVries, Sis LaRue, Sarkis Atamian, Alberta Lincoln, Tom Willard, William Nicholson, Ron Walden, Bill and Lily Stoll, John Nicholson, Lenora Conkle, Brenda LaFleur, Douglas Anderson. What do all these Alaskans have in common? They're all book authors. And they all called publication consultants at 349-2424 for the free booklet, Bringing Your Book to Market. That's 349-2424.
Welcome back to your window to Alaska Outdoors, Alaska Outdoor Magazine. We're glad you decided to come along with us. Now let's return and visit some more with our guest today, Alaska author Steve Levi, who has written a book. Now, what was the name of that book again, Steve?
Travel Smart Alaska.
Travel Smart Alaska. I keep forgetting that because I haven't been taking my ginkgo biloba, I guess Vicki would tell me. Travel Smart Alaska. In your book, Travel Smart Alaska, you talk about a lot of the things going on in the state. But now 5 years ago, you said you also authored a book. What's, why a different book? Why not just upgrade the one that you had before. You know, as things changed, as the history of Nome changed such that now you need a new book?
No, actually, the whole texture of the tourism industry has been changing, especially the, you know, from a writer's perspective. Say 5 years ago, or even 10 years ago now, is that the bulk of the people coming to Alaska were coming on tours. They were tourists. And a tourist is somebody who gets on a cruise line, and they go as far as Haines, and they get on a bus, and they go to Fairbanks, and then they take the train to Anchorage, and then maybe they, fly back to Haines, where they catch the cruise line and go back. Today, we have more and more people are actually going on what is called cultural tourism. In other words, what they want to do is they want to come to Alaska, and they want to visit a different state, and they want a different culture. And what they want is they don't want a tour, but they want to travel on their own. They want to come up, they want to find a hotel or a bed and breakfast, and make their own way. They want to come up with their own itinerary. And that has dramatically changed the tourism industry here in Alaska. Sure, the Princess and the Holland America are still making big dollars, but the fact of the matter is that there are more and more independent tourists out and around, and there aren't that many books that are out there that say, look, when you come to Anchorage and you're looking for a bed and breakfast, here's where you can go. Or if you're looking for a good restaurant, here's where you can go. And now, that's particularly true of the smaller communities like Cordova, Wrangell, Ketchikan, Bethel.
Some of those places that the tour boats don't even hit.
It's pretty hard to get to Bethel on a tour boat.
I've talked to one person one time that did have a train ticket from Portage to Homer, however.
From Portage to Homer?
Portage to Homer. I talked to another that had a voucher that he could rent his car in Anchorage and drop it off in Bethel.
That's a pretty good trick if you can do that.
Yeah,
but you can take a train to Honolulu.
Yes, you can. Honolulu, Alaska.
That's right.
Steve, do you talk about wildlife in your book at all?
Yeah, we steer clear from hunting because most of the people that are coming up here are photographic safari people. One of the things that I make absolutely clear there is the most dangerous animal in Alaska is the moose, and that's because a moose is so stupid. And you get a lot of travelers who come up here and they see this big, slow-moving moose, and they look at it and think it's just like a cow. And they can walk up and put their arm around it and get their picture taken. You know, like, hey, Maud, you know, look what I'm doing here. And then when the moose dances all over them, they can't figure out what happened. But, yeah, there are a lot of, you know, I mean, if you want to go to Alaska and you want to see wildlife, just do the looking. Don't go up and touch it.
How about mosquitoes, the bugs, the pests? Do you warn people about those?
Yeah, I warned them, but, you know, I mean, that's just a fact. If you live in Alaska, it's a fact of life that if you get outside of Anchorage, you're going to be clouded with mosquitoes. There's all kinds of things you can do, and those are in the book. But, you know, if you live in Alaska, you're kind of used to it. Some of the outsiders aren't.
What does your book say about what to do when you got some bugs after you, mosquitoes, those kind of things?
I just give them a list of things like cutters to go ahead and put on that will keep the bugs off them. Eat a lot of garlic and keep other people away from you. But other than that, if you lived in Alaska, you know there's only three or four things you can do, and if those don't work, you're just going to have to live with the indignity.
Do you talk about the Alaska salute at all in your book?
No, and I'm afraid to ask what the Alaska salute is.
Oh, I thought everyone knew. Well, here's the Alaska salute. You've seen it out on the riverbank. When the mosquitoes are there and people are standing there, you know, with their hands going like this, scaring the mosquitoes away.
Mm-hmm.
We interviewed PETA, some folks from PETA a week or so ago, and we asked them. They're the folks that don't want any animals killed for any reason, if it helps man at all. And so we asked them about the wildlife in Alaska, and they commented on that. But the wildlife that we ask about specifically was about mosquitoes and no-see-ums. Steve, here was their response when that question was asked. Let's talk about a couple of animals that we're vitally interested in Alaska. How about mosquitoes and no-see-ums? Can we swat them without offending PETA?
Well, you can certainly swat them without offending me. I personally think that brushing them aside is probably a nicer thing.
What do you think, Steve? How do we...
I find it hard to believe anybody would answer that question that way. Hey, I've been in places where mosquitoes come in clouds. You know, I never thought that I'd wear mosquito netting, and there I was, second day out, And I've got mosquito netting on, and I've got cutters on. So, yeah, I think whoever answered that was probably sitting down in Los Angeles and had never been up here. But it's a good answer, though. I mean,
well, you know, I was wondered if he had seen the Alaska salute out there and thought that's what Alaskans were doing, was brushing them away.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, I thought it was... we got a kick out of it here in the studio and realized that anyone that has would make a comment like that really has not had any real experience
You had to bring him up to Bethel or Fairbanks for a while and then ask him the same question and see what they say.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I guess we each of us handle our mosquito problems differently. Steve, what about Alaska? How has it changed just in the time that you've been here?
Well, I've been up here 25 years now, and as far as tourism goes, particularly, is that Alaska is on the verge of really being discovered big time by the lower 48. For years and years and years, Alaska was looked upon as someplace that was really beautiful to visit, but boy, it was expensive. And every time you talk to somebody in the lower 48, they say, gee, I'd love to come to Alaska, but it's just so expensive to come up there. Well, times have changed. You know, it's no longer anywhere near as expensive as coming to Alaska as it was in the past. Secondly, that there are a lot more opportunities for people to come up on their own. And I get a lot of calls from my brother and sister saying, look, I've got a friend who's going to be coming up. He's going to be spending 3 days in Anchorage. Can he sleep on your floor? And that's happening more and more. So what's happening is there's a whole different kind of a market of people up here. As a matter of fact, one of the fastest growing sectors of tourism that most Alaskans don't even know about is bird watching. I mean, here you got somebody who's got a lot of money, and what they do is they want to see specific kinds of birds, and they'll fly any place to see those birds.
What's the bird, Steve, that nests and only in the Aleutians? Only hits land in the Aleutians. Are you familiar with that bird?
No, I'm not.
You're not a bird watcher.
I'm not a bird watcher. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Here's something that, Steve, you probably are acquainted with. Who is the Petersburg Flash?
The Petersburg Flash. That's Terry Otness.
And is that a real person, by the way?
Yeah, that's a real person, and it's probably going to embarrass him, which I love. As soon as somebody hears the program, yeah, he's a good friend of mine who's a hunter, and we used to go hunting a lot together. He's been hunting for years and years and years, and I'm just sort of new. And I went hunting with him for ducks. The first time I went hunting for duck, asked me to take a big king salmon net with me. And I took the king salmon net, and after about 4 hours of walking around with this big, huge king salmon net out on the flats on Portage, I finally asked him what I was supposed to be doing with his big salmon net because there's nothing I could do with it out there. And he said, oh, yeah. I said, well, you know, as soon as I shoot a duck, I want you to run over and catch it before it hits the ground so we won't bruise the meat. You know, and all these people, ever since then, all these people have been looking at me every time you see me and say, hey, where's your salmon net? You know, are you going to go duck hunting? Better have that king salmon net. Yeah, so.
So that's Alaska's version of the snipe hunt as far as Steve Levi is concerned.
Well, it got me good,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. You and I became acquainted, I think, Steve, through the Petersburg Flash.
Yeah, I used to write stories about him. He shows up every once in a while, and he's still interested in moose because he can't get moose down to Petersburg.
Steve, other books that you've written that people might recognize other than your guidebook?
The one that came out recently that I'm most pleased with is Cowboys of the Sky, which is it's kind of a young adult history of bush pilots in Alaska. One of the problems with a lot of Alaskans is we live up here, but we really don't know that much about the history of the area. We know there were bush pilots here, and we may even know the names of some of them. But we really don't know why these guys were important, and women, why these men and women were important. And what the book does, it kind of gives a quick history of the bush pilots, why they were important, where they flew, and some of the antics that they're famous for.
And all of them died young.
Yeah.
Good share died young.
Now, well, there's an old expression, you know, there are old pilots and there are bold pilots, but there are no old, bold pilots.
And they were all bold.
You had to be bold to be able to survive in those days.
You had to be bold to do the things they did. Yeah, you sure did. Steve, this is the Gold Rush anniversary. Do you think that that's going to do anything with tourism this year? We that live here, can we expect that the aunts and uncles and business associates are going to be dropping in on us this year, do you think?
This year, no. Next year, yes. This is the big boom year for the Klondike strike, because 1898 and 1899 were the years for the Klondike. Nome is going to start in 1899, so the centennial is 1999. And Fairbanks was established in 1904, so 2004 is going to be the centennial for Fairbanks. It's also going to take the lower 48 a while to realize that we are in a centennial. And people are now, see, the people who are in Alaska now are people who bought tickets last November. Okay, the Gold Rush Centennial celebrations are going to be this summer, so that means people are going to be buying tickets in this November for the Gold Rush Centennial next year. So you can expect to see quite a few people up here looking for signs of the Gold Rush in the summer of 1999.
So now's the time to get your book, I guess is what you're saying, prepared for next year's, or at least know where it is available so that when people call and say, hey, I want to come and see some bird or the Old Believers or go to Nome or Kotzebue or even go out and see Laurie Shirk on the Kiana. Remember Steve Levi's book? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm saying that.
Was that a good enough commercial for you?
You got it. If you're looking for anything to specifically to market and sell for the Alaska Gold Rush, work on it now because next summer is going to be your big push. And, of course, if you want to know about the Alaska Gold Rush, you can go down to the Lusac Library and get a copy of my tape. Just check it out of the library called The Story of the Alaska Gold Rush, which will give you a pretty good overall view of the Gold Rush.
We're going to run out of time before we get too far down the road, but before we do, I have two questions, Steve. The first question is, what is your favorite place in Alaska to be a visitor? And secondly, who has been your favorite Alaska character?
My favorite place in Alaska to visit is Kotzebue. And the reason I like Kotzebue is because it's a community that's changing. Every time I fly there, I see that their civilization, so to speak, has moved in more and more and more. When I first went up there, they had one television station, and it picked up RatNet, and there was one hotel. The last time I was up there, which was a couple of years ago, they had cable television, they had a pizza parlor, they had a video rental place. In Kotzebue, I get to watch the frontier disappear. My favorite character is Johnny Muldoon. And Johnny Muldoon is a dog sledder out of Talkeetna that rushed through a winter storm to save a little kid who had been shot with a rifle, and he died in the process. And I kind of like, that's very typically Alaska for me, you know, as people who are sacrificing themselves for the welfare of others.
Is that Johnny Muldoon, is that why we have Muldoon Road?
No, but it might be a relative.
Might be a relative. Well, Steve, I appreciate you being here today. We might take the last 30 seconds or so that we have and tell folks again the name of the book, where you could find it, your name one more time, Steve Levi.
Okay, I'm Steve Levi, and you can find my book, Travel Smart Alaska, at the Cook Inland Book Company. And I'd certainly appreciate if you go down there and start making me a millionaire.
One book at a time. Hey, Steve, thank you. What are you working on, incidentally? Have you got something else coming out?
I've got a history of the Alaska Gold Rush I'm trying to get published right now.
And that will be probably for the Gold Rush.
You got it.
Okay, all right. Steve, thank you again for coming in, and we appreciate the visit with you today. My gratitude goes to our loyal listener. Without you, this show would not be possible. Thanks for listening. When you go outdoors, take a young person with you and teach them by your example what it means to be a sportsman. Sportsmanship isn't something you do. Sportsmanship is what you are. Behind the wheel or in the boat, on the road or in the field, take the high trail. Be a courteous driver, recreate within the law, and please don't litter. Goodbye and good luck. May God bless you in the land of the midnight sun, and may your days be happy and long in Alaska's outdoors. Tomorrow, as always, we'll bring you accurate and authentic answers for Alaskans by Alaskans. In the meantime, keep in touch.